Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, where we feature community conversations around South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel throughout our community and listen to local groups discuss what matters to them. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ammon Swenson. Today's program features the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's 2024 Economic Development Luncheon. AEDC President and CEO Jenna Wright will present results of business and consumer confidence surveys and discuss the group's proposals for a project to revitalize the city. We'll also hear from keynote speaker Andrew Bush, who explains economic trends that could affect Alaska. This program was recorded on August 7th at the Dena'ina Center. We'll start with an update from Anchorage Mayor Suzanne LaFrance about her first weeks in office and plans for the future.
Hi, everyone. It is such a pleasure and an honor to be here today. And thank you to Jenna and to AEDC for the invitation to be here. You know, being in rooms like these with residents who care so deeply about our community just gives me so much confidence in what's ahead for Anchorage. Today marks just over a month in office. This first month has given our team an opportunity to assess and better understand the work in front of us. From hundreds of vacancies to aging capital assets to questions about our financial future, the municipality is facing some big operational challenges. We're also facing some big challenges as a community, from public safety and homelessness to questions about how we make Anchorage a more livable, economically competitive and sustainable place to live, not just for the next few years, but for the next 50. I recently had the opportunity to attend a Bloomberg Mayors Conference with 38 other mayors from around the world. One of the lessons that really stuck out to me from American pragmatist philosopher John Dewey is this: a problem well defined is half solved. I'm sure many of you can think of a problem or two here in Anchorage. In fact, many of you may have felt overwhelmed recently by a feeling that our problems are only getting bigger. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I see our deeper problem as this. We have gotten away from what is core to Alaska and from what is core to Anchorage, which is an unwavering belief in what's possible here, paired with a practical, roll-up-our-sleeves approach to working together and getting things done. Yes, we need to build more housing, staff up our police department, tackle homelessness, take on the childcare crisis, and jumpstart our economy. But first, we need to believe that we can do these things. Anchorage, we must believe that we can do this. Another lesson I've learned in my life is that we can't solve big problems alone. And honestly, we shouldn't even try. I grew up playing soccer and later hockey here in Alaska. Team sports are central to who I am. And I really do love a good sports analogy. But improving our community is a team sport, if ever there was one. And that is what I love about the local level, about local government. Here we can come together as neighbors, find common ground, and solve problems. I've learned that nothing unites a community like a really big pothole or a land use issue. And you know what? If you doubt me on this, swing by your community council when there's a land use issue on the agenda. At the local level, we can see what we have in common most clearly, and we can work together most effectively. My administration is committed to partnering to get things done. We want to do our jobs so that you all can do yours, and we want to work together on the issues we have a shared interest in solving. You all are the experts in your fields. The municipality is not the solution to all our problems, but we commit to do our part and to be a consistent partner to all of you. I'm committed to making this an administration with a bias toward doing. Last week, our transition teams, led by 18 community leaders, presented their reports back to the administration, identifying actions we can take in the next 6 months, in the next year, and in the next 3 years. They shared recommendations for each of our administration's key priorities: good government, safe streets and trails, and building our future. We've already started taking action in each of these areas. So since July 1, we delivered the severely delayed annual financial audit and are already working on improvements for the next years. We successfully sold $147 million in bonds, and mind you, at a really good interest rate, a really, really good interest rate, like, you know, buying your house 10 or 20 years ago interest rate. We started on a project to review and adjust job qualifications, and we're looking at implementing policies like telework to make municipal jobs more competitive and more accessible. We worked with APD to update the body-worn camera policy and begin the release of video footage in response to community feedback. We revamped our approach to camp abatement, bringing more internal coordination and making a clear statement that we will address public safety concerns. We've started shelter planning to get us out of an annual cycle of crisis. We've onboarded a high-impact team while retaining staff who have been and continue to be dedicated to doing their jobs. Some of our team is here today, and if you all would just wave. Thank you. They are seated right next to the Anchorage Assembly table. You all should wave, too. We are here to help, and we are here to serve the people of Anchorage. With 4.5 weeks on the job, I can confidently report that our municipal workforce is our organization's greatest asset. And I know many of you would say the same about your own workforce as well. Our work has just begun. Over the next 3 years, we will deliver an ethical, accountable local government and make it easier to access local government services. And yes, that means taking on the municipal website. We will improve public safety by staffing APD, but also by using our public resources more effectively, from the mobile crisis team and mobile intervention team to the Anchorage Safety Patrol. We'll tackle homelessness and get out of the annual crisis where we have large camps in the summer and not enough warm places to go in the winter. We are committed to making tangible, visible progress on homelessness. We're also committed to making it easier to build and renovate housing here in Anchorage because we know we just need that so, so badly. Yes, let's clap to that. You know, we talk about wanting our kids and grandkids to be able to stay here, and so we really must make progress in this area if we truly believe that. And we have incredible opportunities to build Anchorage's identity as a vibrant, subarctic Alaskan city with a strong Indigenous heritage, world-class urban amenities, and access to the best outdoor recreation in the world. And yes, I may be a bit biased on that last point. Okay, I'm completely biased on that last point. But I stand by it. I grew up in the Valley and have lived here in Anchorage for over 26 years. This is where my husband Dave and I chose to put down roots and raise our 3 kids, along with our rambunctious puppy Pippa. I have lived on Dena'ina land for most of my life. I am grateful for the centuries of stewardship of the land and resources and ongoing Indigenous leadership, and for the opportunity to live and work here with all of you. We have a lot of work to do, and it's going to take all of us. But as someone recently told me, we have everything we need right here. Thank you all so much. I am so looking forward to working with all of you.
Well, thank you, Mayor LaFrance, for sharing that very inspiring speech. We wish you nothing but success in your new role for our city. Now, it is time to turn our attention to Project Anchorage, which is a transformative plan to invest in Anchorage and build capital improvement projects that improve our quality of life. Before we get started, I'd like to invite Walter Featherly to join me on stage. Walter and I are going to talk about the path that brought us together and the steps that we've taken so far to promote Project Anchorage, which is a significant goal of AEDC's Choose Anchorage initiative. This is a big discussion, and we look forward to continuing our work with the municipality and engaging in a robust public process so that we can all work together to build a brighter, stronger future for Anchorage.
Although you see Jenna and me on this stage representing AEDC, this initiative is the product of a broad coalition of business organizations. At the end of the day, AEDC could not do this work alone, and we are so grateful for these organizations.
So at its core, Project Anchorage was designed to be a business-backed and community-informed initiative aimed at spurring economic growth, lowering property taxes, capturing visitor spending, and improving our overall quality of life for Anchorage residents so that we can retain and attract talent in a national competition for workforce. This goal would be accomplished through instituting a temporary 3% sales tax, two-thirds of which would go towards property tax relief, and one-third of which would go towards capital projects and infrastructure investments that make Anchorage an even better place to live, work, and play for all residents in all neighborhoods from Eagle River to Girdwood. So I'd like to take a step back and help the audience understand how we got to the proposal that we're about to describe further. In the fall of 2022, myself and a delegation of 20 Anchorage business leaders visited Oklahoma City, which was host to the International Economic Development Council's annual conference. What we saw was an innovative, vibrant city that was experiencing growth and economic prosperity, but it wasn't always like that. At last year's fall luncheon, you heard Oklahoma City's former mayor, Mick Cornett, explain that back in the 90s, Oklahoma City was facing similar challenges to Anchorage. After a drop in oil prices and a widespread banking system collapse, their economy was struggling, and young people and families were leaving. After a rather humiliating experience, when they attempted to attract a United Airlines maintenance center but were turned down because the executives refused to bring their families to Oklahoma City, they decided to change their destiny from a city that was losing talent and began to invest in themselves by implementing a temporary 1% sales tax to fund projects that would make the city a better place to live and subsequently retain people. And now, as a result of these investments, Oklahoma City has attracted billions of dollars of private investment, their population is growing year over year, and their economy is absolutely booming. Since that original vote on the sales tax in 1993, voters have reauthorized the program three more times, most recently passing with 72% of the vote. And now here are just two examples of what Oklahoma City spent their revenue on. They built Scissortail Park, which is a 70-acre downtown park activated with splash pads, an amphitheater, trails, performance stages, and more. They also built an innovation district, which serves as a small business development and entrepreneurship hub, a biopharmaceutical workforce training center, and it has lodging and community space on site for innovators to come from all over the country. Now, bringing this story back home to Anchorage, once we got back from this trip, we just couldn't stop talking about how revolutionary this program was and how Anchorage was really primed to do something similar. And eventually, the idea caught the attention of a couple of our assembly members who said, hey, I really like the idea of the Oklahoma City program, but I'd also like to see some property tax relief, which is something that we also recognized as a critical need.
To develop the structure that we're recommending today, the AEDC Board of Directors convened an ad hoc committee in the summer of 2023 to debate the merits, structure, and appropriate exemptions of a dedicated sales tax in Anchorage. After several meetings, the committee produced a comprehensive set of recommendations, ultimately modeled around both Oklahoma City's MAPS program and Anchorage's Project 80s, which brought us the Luzak Library, the Performing Arts Center, the Museum, the Tony Knows Coastal Trail, and other community projects. Later that fall, and through the beginning of this year, we began working with a coalition of private businesses and business associations to gather support for the initiative, which the coalition has dubbed Project Anchorage. While we took inspiration from Oklahoma City's success, the Project Anchorage proposal is tailored to the specific needs of Anchorage, and a lot of work has gone into the proposal we have set up today. First, we recommend there be property tax relief. A dollar for dollar under the tax cap exchange that would not result in any new revenues to the municipality. rather than coming from property owners, the same amount of revenues would come from the sales tax, reducing Anchorage's property tax burden by roughly $120 million per year, resulting in a tax break of about 20% or $100 off the monthly mortgage payment of an average house in Anchorage. Next, the remaining one-third would be modeled very closely to what Oklahoma City did and would be dedicated, by law, towards specific quality of life and infrastructure projects that came from the community of Anchorage. We're currently in the process of collecting ideas from the community to eventually present to the Assembly for their consideration. Once approved by the Assembly, the ballot measure would include the specific projects slated for construction, so voters can be sure of what they are voting for. Our estimates show that this portion of the tax would result in about $60 million in new revenues each year that the tax is in place.
And I'll jump in here and say that while we believe that property tax relief is important, this 1% for capital projects is the part of Project Anchorage that is absolutely vital to the success of our city. We love this city, you love this city, and the sad reality is that we've been reporting that we've been losing our population for a decade, and our current forecasts are expected to see that trend continue. And we want better for this amazing place that we call home, and one way that we can make ourselves attractive in a national competition for workforce is by investing in ourselves to create a vibrant city that talent wants to live in.
Well said, Jenna. One last detail is that we debated the exemption structure quite robustly. To ensure that working families are not disproportionately affected, we have proposed that the basic necessities of everyday living not be taxed. These would include most groceries, medical care, rental housing, financial services, gasoline, and child care. Additionally, we recommend a cap of $30 on the amount of tax collected from each transaction. Ultimately, like all public policy, the final slate of exemptions would be up to the Assembly and the voters of Anchorage to approve. But this is our committee's recommendation. Lastly, a primary benefit of the sales tax is that everyone pays for it, even those who don't live here. We believe that it's important to diversify our revenue streams and start collecting more revenue from visitors, both out-of-state visitors as well as the thousands of people who commute into our city on a daily basis. At the current tourism levels, we expect that at least 20% of the overall tax will be paid for by people who don't live here.
So right now, our focus is to get project ideas from all over the city, and we've created projectanchorage.com to help us do that. This project idea portal will close on September 15th, and after we gather up all the project ideas, cost them, and figure out what our budget is, we'll pass the most popular ones over to the Assembly for their consideration, review, and hopefully ultimate approval. Our goal is that it will be placed on the ballot in April of 2025 with specific projects for the consideration of Anchorage voters. And as a quick sneak peek, we already started asking residents for their project ideas back in mid-June and have received a ton of great ideas. Here's a breakdown of which categories the projects are falling into. Residents are especially keen to see city beautification, parks, recreation facility, and trails. We know that this is a big conversation and there will be more questions and thoughts, and we certainly welcome that conversation as we continue this effort. I know we're in a room full of people who absolutely love Anchorage, and it's time to come together and accomplish something truly extraordinary. Now, at this time, I want to remind the audience that Project Anchorage is just one part of AEDC's broader strategic plan, Choose Anchorage. The goals within this plan are ambitious and they require community support. And I want to thank you so much, Walter, for joining us on stage and sharing more about Project Anchorage. Let's give him a big round of applause. Thank you. All right. Okay, so switching gears and talking some economic indicators and summer jobs numbers. Earlier this year, we published a one-year economic forecast of things that we expected to see in Anchorage. And some of our big takeaways were that we expected to see job growth in nearly all sectors, personal income growth was expected to continue to rise, and inflation was expected to decline from the continued pressure of higher interest rates. And so we have received some preliminary job estimates for the first half of this year that give us an idea of whether certain aspects of the forecast are materializing, and I'm very excited to share those details with you today. Now, the first indicator that we'll take a look at is our estimated unemployment rate in Anchorage, which has remained historically low at just 4% so far this year. This is indicative of a tight labor market for Alaska and Anchorage. But preliminary June numbers show that things are beginning to ease with a 4.2% unemployment rate and an estimated labor force that's nearly 151,000, a number that we've not seen reported since in June since 2018. The next indicator of our job market is AEDC's real-time jobs intelligence reporting tool. This tool scrapes all of the major job posting websites, it deduplicates the data and shows both the total number of jobs as well as the number of unique jobs posted, because as you all know, it's very common for employers to post the same job in multiple spots. So far this year, we've seen 34,000 unique jobs being posted in Anchorage, representing an 8% increase over the same time period last year, at the same time that national job posting boards are experiencing a decline of 3.3%. And as we've all seen some recent national news, it looks like the national labor market is beginning to cool. This demonstrates that Anchorage's job market is still strong, though, and it's really only being constrained right now by a lack of available workers. Employers that are topping the list with the most jobs available so far this year are in the healthcare and government sectors, two very in-demand sectors right now. Now, turning to actual job changes by sector, if we average the monthly job changes that have occurred in the first half of this year as compared to the first half of last year, we see job growth in nearly all sectors, and we see significant job growth in several key sectors, including construction, healthcare, professional and business services, and leisure and hospitality. And then for those few sectors that appear to have lost jobs, none are more than 2% overall, and in most cases, those sectors tend to have some lower-paying entry-level jobs that are susceptible to job hopping to industries that are paying better, for instance, construction. And this is an area that's going like absolutely gangbusters this year. So far, it's been a phenomenal summer for the construction industry that's currently estimated to be experiencing a whopping 15% job growth year over year as they continue to work on projects that were backlogged during the pandemic, as well as new projects that are related to the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And then the 4% increase that we're seeing in professional and business services is partially intertwined with construction growth, as many jobs within this sector are for engineers, architects, and other professional jobs that are supporting some of the same projects as the IIJA construction projects. Next, after years of desperately struggling to find workforce for the healthcare sector, it's refreshing to see an estimated 6% year-over-year growth that's currently representing about 1,300 additional jobs so far this year. And reports from this industry are that the number of temporary traveling workers is down from years past, and the number of local, more permanent hires is up, which is allowing providers to better control their costs and bring more stability to operations. The healthcare industry is also starting to see the fruits of years of investment in workforce development and training programs where new talent is beginning to enter the workforce, which is helping to counteract the wave of retirements that we saw during the pandemic, as well as the growing demand for healthcare from our aging population. Lastly, we'll highlight the leisure and hospitality sector, which is experiencing notable growth of about 4% job growth this year, equating to 750 jobs. Growth in this sector is primarily being fueled by, once again, another strong tourism season. Thank you very much, Visit Anchorage and ATIA. Yeah, let's give a round of applause. That's right. We're also very happy to report that most tourism metrics are up year over year, with a 4% increase in hotel revenue, a huge 39% increase in convention sales, and just over 5% increase in TSA passenger counts. Now, we'll combine all of those factors to analyze overall employment. And we typically compare Anchorage's job markets to two key time frames. One is 2015, which is our all-time high jobs year, and that's represented by that very top blue line. And then the second is 2019, which is, of course, the last full year before the pandemic, represented by that aqua-colored line, second to the top of the graph that you see. And this year's estimated jobs are shown by the maroon bars. And I say estimated because these numbers are just that. They're preliminary estimates that are certainly subject to revision, but they're the most up-to-date figures that we have at this point. And so in January, we were really optimistic that we would gain about 1,400 jobs this year. And so far, that number is turning out to be possibly even conservative, although it's certainly too soon to make a final conclusion. But what we can say with confidence is that so far this year, we're reporting job levels that are above our pre-pandemic numbers, and we're in solid year-over-year job growth territory. Current estimates do show that we're behind our 2015 numbers by about 6,000, so we still have a ways to go there, but we're headed in the right direction and should be celebrating this news. So how does all this great jobs market make consumers feel? Well, AEDC partnered with Alaska Survey Research to conduct the Consumer Confidence Index Survey. And the purpose of doing this survey every quarter is to assess consumer confidence in the Anchorage area as a measure of economic health. We consider numbers that are above 55 to be optimistic, below 45 to be pessimistic, and those in the middle is we're not quite sure. So far this year, Anchorage consumers were in neutral territory when considering their local economy and personal financial situation, but are feeling markedly bleak about their expectations for the future with a score of only 34.7. So after compiling all of these numbers, this leaves Anchorage with a consumer optimism index of 41.8. And this sentiment is likely driven by the fact that Anchorage faces some tough challenges that our mayor alluded to earlier in the program. We're aware of our continued trend of net out-migration, and it really is impossible to ignore our city's struggles with unaffordable housing and people experiencing homelessness and a lack of childcare. And we are all working on those solutions for today, but of course we need a plan to think about Anchorage's future. And once again, this is why AEDC is leading the charge on Project Anchorage, is so that we can work together to build a brighter future that gets Anchorage residents excited and optimistic. But luckily, my next report on Business Confidence Index paints a much rosier picture. For the 16th time, AEDC partnered with McKinley Research Group to conduct the Business Confidence Index survey with the purpose of assessing business conditions in the Anchorage area and measuring business confidence. This year, we fielded an online survey to 150 Anchorage business leaders that were in a variety of sectors and of various sizes as measured by their gross sales or operating budget and employment levels. So in this index, we measure five separate indices that represent the overall business confidence composite index. In general, scores above 50 are considered optimistic, whereas those below 50 indicate a more pessimistic view. We'll dive into each index in greater detail on subsequent slides, but the good news is that Anchorage businesses are optimistic in almost all categories, including employment, gross sales, net profits, and capital expenditures, although they're following a similar trend to what we saw in the confidence survey. Or the Consumer Confidence Survey. Overall, these numbers represent a composite index of 58.2, which is well within optimistic territory. So starting with employment index at 56.2, this index is the third highest it's been in the last decade. 42% of respondents expect their employment to increase in 2024, 11% expect a decrease, and about half expect no change. And as we discussed in the summer jobs market update, we don't currently have enough workers in Anchorage, and that fact could certainly be impacting Anchorage employers' decisions to attempt expansion or not. Now, for these next three measurements, respondents were asked how their organization was expected to perform this year compared to last in terms of gross sales, capital expenditures, and net profits. These indices tend to move together, but what's interesting about this year's results is that 67% of respondents expected their gross sales to increase this year. Great. But only 54% of respondents expected their net profits to increase. And this deviation from previous trends could be explained by the inflationary environment that we're in, because as we know, higher sales don't necessarily mean higher profits with the cost of goods sold that has become so high. Now, when asked about the economy, about 44% of respondents felt Anchorage's economy would fare better this year, and 50% felt Alaska's economy would fare better. The disparity between the city and state could be attributed to some very large statewide projects that we have going on in the North Slope or in the construction industry, and some of the more visible local issues that we're facing is causing residents to be a little bit more unsure about Anchorage's future. But we are happy to report that a record 38% of respondents said they did plan to make capital improvements this year. And what's more is that 2/3 of those capital improvements are expected to result in more jobs. When asked to identify barriers to additional business growth, the number one response was, not surprisingly, the availability of labor, with 55% of respondents saying that was their issue. It's followed by quality housing and condition of the state economy at 42% and 40%. These numbers are very similar to what we saw last year when we made this presentation, with the exception of housing, which interestingly jumped up from 28% last year to 42% this year. Now, finally, all five of these indices are combined to calculate the composite index for 2024 of 58.2. And this is a 2-point decrease from last year, but it's still well above the 10-year average and indicates that businesses are optimistic about the future of doing business in Anchorage. This makes sense because we've got a lot to look forward to. We're seeing fantastic job growth in many of our key sectors. Private and public capital investments are being made across the city. A transformative public education model is being deployed in our high schools, and perhaps most exciting, our community is coming together to reimagine what our next chapter can look like as part of Project Anchorage. So if you'd like to go into any of the reports that I just did a presentation on, they can be found on our website at aedcweb.com. I thank you for your time in going over the numbers today and hope you're as optimistic as I am, knowing that we have a lot to look forward to.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans on Alaska Public Media. Today's program features the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's 2024 Economic Development Luncheon. We just heard AEDC President and CEO Jenna Wright. Up next is keynote speaker Andrew Bush.
To think about the economic past, I want you to use your ears. That is the sound of COVID. That is the sound of a jet airplane not taking off. That is the sound of a truck staying in dockage. That is the sound of a car staying in the garage. That's what we did to the global economy. And I'm here to give you the good news. We'll never do that again. Even if there's an outbreak of bird flu, this is not going to happen. We destroyed a lot of people's lives by doing this. We obviously were doing our best to try to save lives, but ultimately, from an economic standpoint, it really hurt a lot more people. And as I said, the good news is we're never going to do this again. Now, this is Dhaka, Bangladesh. This is one of the loudest places on the planet. At street level, it is the sound of a jet airplane taking off. That is the sound of the global economic recovery. That's the good news, right? We pulled together between the White House, Congress, and the Federal Reserve. We made available $14 trillion to re-stimulate the economy. And that's fantastic news. Now, this was not like 2007, 2008, where if you wanted to stimulate the economy and you wanted to get stimulus checks out, right, Congress had to pass a law, and then they had to go over to Treasury and say, hey, do you know who we can send this to? And Treasury was like, yeah, we've got an Excel spreadsheet someplace, and maybe we can make, you know, a physical checkup and then send it out snail mail, and that all took 6 to 9 months. That's not what happened this time. What happened this time was Congress said, hey, let's get some stimulus money out. Treasury goes, yeah, bam. We can direct deposit that into people's checking account. That way they can pay for their groceries, they can pay for their rent, they can pay for their mortgage, they can pay for their car. And we grew rapidly. We went from minus 35% GDP in 2020 in the second quarter to plus 35% in the third quarter, and we grew rapidly all the way up into 2022. But then, being American, we overdid it. Yeah, it cracked. Unbelievable. Now, let me give you some context of what was going on, right? So economies are based on consumer spending, right? And so it drives so much of the global economy. In China, it's about 37% of their economy. In Europe, it's about 52%. In India, it's about 60%. And here in the good old US of A, it's about 67%. And of that last percentage, 70% is spent on services and 30% is spent on goods. But if you can't go to a bar, if you can't take vacation, if you can't go out, that spending on services starts to go down. And all of a sudden, that spending on goods starts to go up. Because why? You had to stay home. You needed a new desk. You needed a new laptop. Maybe Junior needed a new iPad to go to school. All of that spending on goods went up. And just that simple 5% bump from 30% up to about 35% created all sorts of dislocations within the global supply chain. and it also led to a lot of inflation. Now, this is the part where our central bank really screwed up. They thought this was transitory, and they kept saying that, transitory, transitory. This will go away once these global supply chain issues get settled down. Well, just as people were going back to work, just as people were going taking vacations, the end of 21 into 22, what happened? We had the outbreak of the Ukraine war, and energy prices shot up, and inflation went from goods sector into the service sector. And wow, did we get a lot of the genie out of the bottle at 9% CPI. That's brutal. And that hurt a lot of people, especially low-income to middle-income earners who spend an inordinate amount of their earnings on those things that are, you know, really important for them, like gasoline, like housing. All of those things shot up. And so that's really what happened during COVID. Now, the good news is we didn't stay there. Things changed. These central banks around the world figured out, hey, maybe we can, you know, take our foot off the gas and start doing something about this inflation. And that's exactly what the Federal Reserve did. They raised interest rates 525 basis points in 14 months. And through that, so we had a tightening of monetary policy, and through that, then we had inflation start to ease, and of course, we've had the U.S. economy start to ease. And we've had that shift from spending on goods that went up, that eased off, and spending on services went back up. The next slide I'm going to show you is emblematic of that. I'm going to show you the PMIs for goods and services. And you can see what it looks like here. On the goods side, it was rock and roll, you know, up until 22. Everybody was ordering stuff from Amazon. Cargo was going crazy. Delivery was going crazy. Everybody was buying stuff online. That's how we changed and adapted to what was going on with COVID. Of course, we didn't stay that way. As things opened up, and the miracle of Operation Warp Speed for the vaccines came through, people felt more confident about going out, and so they did. There was a lot of revenge spending that was going on, right? And so we saw that drop down in the PMI for goods. Now, on services, that's not the case. It's been above 50 for a while. And so that dichotomy, really, we're really normalizing back to where we were prior to COVID. And overall, this is a good thing because it works out where inflation really can come down. We don't have those problems anymore with the supply chain, or, you know, not as much, I should say, because there's still stuff going on in the Middle East. But overall, this is really good news. And really emblematic of that, if you think about cargo container ships, where were they prior to the outbreak of the virus? They were at $2,000 per container. Obviously, in 21, in December, they were up to $20,000. Now they're back down to two. They bop up to about 7,000, depending on what the Houthis are shooting at with ships going through the Red Sea. But that's where we're at. All right, with that in mind, obviously the Anchorage International Cargo is really representative of that pop to demand for goods overall, because it's a stopping station, right? If you're moving stuff from Asia through the air, it's probably going to go through Anchorage, right? Because it's a great place to refuel. But you can see what happened. Now, what does that mean? As we're looking at estimates going forward, you can see it's starting to come back down and normalize. And that's fine because it was rock and roll for those 2 or 3 years. It's been great. Now it's going to normalize a little bit, and we shouldn't be surprised by it. We should plan for this. With that, I'd mentioned the Ukraine war. Obviously, this led to a spike in gasoline prices, but also in diesel prices as well. And if you think about groceries, last mile, it's diesel prices that drive the value of that. And we saw those spikes significantly. Now, we learned two things from that war. Number one, oil is an international market. It doesn't matter if the United States or Europe doesn't buy Russian oil. Because why? Because China and India will buy as much as they possibly can at a discounted rate. Great for them, but not great for putting sanctions on Russia. So the price of oil really didn't change much. As a matter of fact, at one point, Russia was actually producing more oil than they did prior to the outbreak of the war. The other thing that we learned is natural gas is a localized market, right? You got to get it there through pipelines, essentially. So we saw a big spike in natural gas during the outbreak of the Ukraine war. But guess what? Happy days, right? And I don't want, from an economic standpoint, I'm going to say this, but happy days, we frack a lot. Man, we became the largest exporter of LNG and the world's largest producer of oil. That war, while it's horrible, really helped our oil production and energy production in the United States. So kind of there's winners and losers when it comes to war, and our ability to produce LNG to export over to Europe really eased the burden on them from what was going on to shut down those Russian oil pipelines. Now, we do have a problem, right? And we still have a problem with housing. Now, it's a difficult problem. This is something that drives me crazy when people talk about inflation overall in the housing market. You know, inflation, they say, oh, you know, inflation's come down to 3%. Isn't that great? And I say, no, it's not. Because prices went from here to here, and now they're just going up at 3%. That's really tough. I mean, groceries are still significantly above where they were prior to the outbreak of rioters. And if you want to know why the consumer feels so bad, right, and why Joe Biden's popularity ratings were so low, it's all about inflation. How do you feel now compared to what was going on prior to the outbreak of the virus? And to some extent, that's a survey that Jenna was talking about, too, here. It's all about inflation. It's all about how you feel. Can you make ends meet? And it's really difficult for low-income and middle-income earners because of that rise in prices, and that has not abated, really. It just hasn't. And when you're talking about housing overall, you know, it's gone up. And if you think about it, not only has the price gone up, but the cost of the money's gone up significantly as well. It's really hard to buy a place. And that's a problem in the housing market overall. And construction costs have gone up significantly as well. They're up about 40% since the outbreak of the war. So if you're looking to build something, whether it's a warehouse or a church, holy smokes, whatever you thought you were going to build back in 2019, if you're doing it today, you're going to, you know, have 40% less, basically. So keep that in mind. And I mentioned CPI. This has come off significantly. One of the bigger drivers, of course, was in the auto area where these auto manufacturers, like if you're wondering why auto prices went up so significantly, I mean, it was twofold. One is that they made a mistake. They canceled a lot of their chip orders. Huge mistake by the automakers because they thought, oh, people are not going to drive. Why would they drive during COVID? Right? Because they're not going to take an airplane. I don't know. So all of a sudden the demand was high, but the production wasn't there, right? So this is classic economics 101. Demand's really high, supply stays low, the prices go way up. And you know what was crazy, of course, is that you couldn't get a new car, so used car prices shot up as well. That was wild. Now what we see is that they've got it under control, they've got the chips, and new car prices are dropping significantly, so are used car prices. And so that's what we see overall with inflation. The thing I want to point out here is just it's flattening out at about 3% with the CPI. And of course, the target is for the Federal Reserve at 2%. So we're a full percentage point above where they want inflation to be. We're making a lot of progress, but they're not going to say, oh, job done, we're good, you know, we can cut rates. No, that's not the case. So keep that in mind. Job is not finished. No one's appearing on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific Ocean saying, you know, job accomplished anytime soon from the Federal Reserve. Now, it's not all bad. There's a lot going on in construction, and it's really, it has to do a lot with manufacturing. A lot of stuff is happening in that. And what you can see here is the basically the bipartisan infrastructure plan plus all the other spending bills, and I'll get to those in a second, that are occurring to this day, and you're going to get some of that money on the infrastructure plan. I think per capita, you're going to get more than the rest of any other state that's out there. But this is really good. Now, I'm going to show you in a second something's a little interesting. There's a lot going on in this space. Semis, semiconductors, EVs, and manufacturing. Sadly, that's not happening in Alaska. It's not. That's troublesome. If you're looking to participate in this, and you got to get going. Somehow you have to attract people to come here. Now, we'll get into that, right? But this is something that's glaring to me. And I want you to think, too, about electric vehicles, right? It may seem like, that's not going to really happen and blah, blah, blah. The advancements that are coming with AI, not only in the cars, but really on the battery side of things, is going to blow you away in a really short period of time. This world's going to change its energy demands in a short period of time. And I'll talk about that in just a little bit, but it's something I want you to think about. Now, I don't want to sound negative, right? So let me give you some positive news that's out there. Here's a good question. Who's worked with like a consultant on their business? How about a PE firm? Ooh, my condolences, right? The reason why I say that is because these are really smart people, but you know what they do? They talk about animals when they come to your business. It's really weird, right? And you know what animal they talk about? An alligator. Why do they talk about an alligator? Because they want you to do something. They want you to open the alligator's mouth as big as possible. What the heck does that mean? It means you want to raise your revenues as high as you can and drop your expenses. It's pretty straightforward. That's what PE firms do. What I've got up here is a slide of the consumer's alligator mouth, right? And so inflation has been hurting consumers. Here's another bit of good news. If you owned a property and if you had a stock portfolio, you are a lot wealthier today than when prior to COVID. It's gone up huge. Like all the craziness with the stock market recently, ignore that, right? This is a lot of wealth that's been created, $161 trillion for the United States. Now, it's not everybody has this. Don't get me wrong. So low-income, middle-income earners don't have that per se, but the upper-income earners and people that own homes, they're doing great from this standpoint. Housing has gone up 40% since COVID. That's pretty crazy. Actually, it's a little higher than, well, stock market's gone up 50, housing's gone up 40 approximately. And so that's good news because that means they have a lot more money. That means they can invest in a lot of different areas. Capital is more available. This is actually good news to some extent. Now, just a little bit about the stock market, and I'll tell you this really quickly. Ignore that nonsense, right? It's just been so volatile. And the thing that kills me is when you see people calling for emergency rate cuts by the Fed. Why would the Fed cut rates? They haven't done their job to some extent, right? They haven't beat inflation. So keep that in mind. Like, they're not going to come to the rescue for anything of a 5% drop in the stock market. Now, here's the really good news. So many people are talking about a recession. It's ridiculous. We had 2.8% growth in the second quarter, and we're going at 2.9% right now. Like, we're nowhere near a recession. Now, in manufacturing, sure. In goods production, I get it, right? Inflation is still a problem, but overall, the economy is still growing. Now, the question is, how many times has the Federal Reserve cut rates this year? I think they're on target to do 2 times. The market priced in, like, 6 just recently with the market selling off, but they're wrong. And they had 6 at the beginning of the year, too, and they were wrong then as well. So I'm just telling you, just be very careful when you see people on CNBC or Bloomberg talking about, you know, expect this, expect that. The Fed doesn't know what it's doing. They're going to sit on their hands for a while because they totally screwed up previously. And so they want to make sure that they don't reaccelerate inflation before they start cutting interest rates. But let's get to the economic future. This is the vanilla of the most vanilla economists out there. There's like 2,000 OECD economists. They all get in a room and then they throw their predictions in a hat, basically, and they average it out. So you know it's kind of a mess. But here's what they said. For this year, it's about 2.6%. For next year, it's 1.8%. And I think that's about right. I see things slowing down, but nothing crazy. You know, 2% growth is fantastic as long as inflation can continue to come down. Now, this is the part of the program where I have to give you my big economic secret. Ready? Here it is. Most economists are awful at predicting the economy. They stink, right? So at the end of 21, they were predicting 3% growth for the U.S. economy in 22. What did we get? Negative growth for the first 2 quarters. Technically a recession to some extent, right? So these are really smart people. But you know what they're missing on their models? Like, they're missing what I call the X factor. This is the thing that you put on your model that says, you know, I just don't know what's going on. And it usually has a minus sign. And depending on how big that uncertainty is, that's how, you know, you make that number bigger or smaller. But these are some of the big things. I'm worried about China, and I'm worried about their economic growth models. I think they got real problems there. So keep that in mind. These are my economic takeaways. Inflation is going to continue to come off. I think we'll be at about 10%, or I'm sorry, about 3.8%. End of the year for the 10-year, which means the mortgage rates where they're at right now is about as good as we're going to get. Because I don't think these numbers that came out last Friday were real. I think they were impacted by the hurricane. I think you'll see better numbers come out in August, and then we'll get into September, and we'll have a better feel for this. Yes, supply chain is going to continue to be crazy due to all the political turmoil. Guess what? What are we waiting for right now in the Middle East? Iran to do something to Israel. And they're going to. We just don't know what it is yet. So we'll see if that speeds things up as far as turmoil go. And then finally, GDP, yes, it's slowing into 2024, but it's going to be a function to some extent of how many times the Federal Reserve cuts rates between now and 2025. I think they're only going to do 2. That should take us to 1.5% to 2% GDP growth for 2025. I think everybody in the state is very familiar with how much money is flowing here, right? And the government programs that are available, that are going to come here, the money's starting to flow. But here's my question to you. Is that all you want from this? Is that all you want? Are you going to have the roads built and then everybody leaves? You have a really pristine, shiny new road. That's great. But the really high-end workers, right, that get paid to create some of this stuff, architects, surveyors, and so on, there's just not enough of them in this state, honestly. Now, let me give you an example of some of the problems you're going to have in a really short period of time. I'm going to use Boise, Idaho as an example. They have two major projects that are going on there. One is a Micron chip plant. The other one is a data center down in Kuna, down from Boise, Idaho. They expect over the next 2 to 4 years, they need 2,000 electricians to do just those two jobs. They have 1,200 in the state. That's what you're competing against. You're competing against other states doing the exact same thing that you're going to be doing, especially when it comes to roads and bridges and infrastructure. Everybody needs those workers. So how are you going to get them to come here? I think you have to make an investment at some point in this city. Otherwise, those people are just not going to stay here, and they're going to scatter after the work is done. And that's, I just want to hammer that home. This is Andy Bush's opinion. It's not anybody else's. You can throw things at me if you want. But I go around the country, and I see this everywhere, whether it's Iowa, Idaho, or Texas. Everybody's competing for labor. Another thing, just regulatory chaos. You guys are subject to a lot of regulations here. These are listing some of them. The Chevron deference ruling by the Supreme Court is really going to cause a lot of regulatory chaos. I'm not going to dive too deeply into this, but wow, everything's going to get litigated in a really short period of time. Trade and foreign policy, we got a big problem with China overall. We're going to see more people like Europe. Obviously, they put a lot of sanctions on the EVs that China produces. They're never going to shut off their manufacturing sector. They're just going to continue to produce stuff, and that's going to put downward pressure on a lot of industries unless you do something about it, like put tariffs on them. Obviously, as I mentioned, we're worried about war in the Middle East right now. And here is, like, the budget deficit. I know we're going to get some questions about that maybe, but, like, yes, it's exploding. And these are some projections by the CBO. We're going to have a $1.9 trillion deficit this year. Yeah. So think about that when you're looking at whether it's Kamala Harris or former President Trump. Like, start listening for their policies. If there's no pay for, if there's no willingness to pay for the policies that they have or try to reduce these budget deficits, we're going to accelerate the problems that we have. And really, where the rubber meets the road, I'll give you the crisis date for when we're going to see serious action on that. And that is about 2032, Medicare runs out as far as the trust fund goes. And Social Security is probably somewhere between 35 and 36. It's an immediate 20% cut across the board. Get ready for it, because I don't see a lot of movement forward at our federal government level to solve this problem. All right, so let's get into the speed of change here. There's a lot of people that came across the border. 3.8 million, depending on how you estimate it. This actually isn't, from an economic standpoint, I know it doesn't really impact Anchorage and Alaska overall, but wow, like if you're competing against the lower 49, right, and they need people, all of a sudden you got a big workforce that came in. That's great news overall. So, yeah, I mean, we want legal immigration, to be sure, don't get me wrong, but from an economic standpoint, this is great news. You all lost a little bit of people over the last time frame. For the state, it was about 1.4%. Obviously, a lot of that was in Anchorage overall. So not to belabor the point, but again, like, this is really important to make that investment back into Anchorage overall. You got to attract people. You got to make it easy. You got to get them to want to stay here after they work here. Now, there's a lot of weather volatility going on. I feel bad for the people in Juneau. Obviously, there's some flooding down there. But there's a big storm down in South Carolina. I almost didn't get my chance to come up here. Let me just say this. I don't care what you think about climate. I really don't. And you shouldn't care what I say about climate. What you should care about is what insurance companies think about climate. They lost $32 billion last year. They're pulling out of Florida. They're pulling out of California. And they're raising insurance rates everywhere to cover those costs and losses. So just keep that in mind when we're talking about climate change. It's like you can have a lot of different opinions on it, but just look at the actors that are, and what they're doing. We need a lot more electricity overall. These are some of the transmission lines we need. Massive. We need more of that. You're going to need that here. You're going to need more electricity because that's where the economy's going. It's electric. So let me get into the future growth opportunities. These are some good things to address energy. Holy smokes. How is it possible that the state almost ran out of natural gas? I'm floored by that. I can't get my head around it at all. That's just crazy town. Now, what's nice, too, is that you could be at the forefront of an SME, right? This is a small modular nuclear reactor, right? And that's what's SMR, sorry. That's what's interesting about what's going on at that Air Force base, right? I hope they get that thing in there, and I think they will. Once you do one of those, you know, you can set the world on fire to some extent with the ability to generate cheap electricity in a cold environment. That should draw people to want to put data centers in this area. So it's something that's really neat. Now, as I said, one of the simplest things is to actually just change the wires out. Believe it or not, these are called reconducting wires, advanced conductors. As a matter of fact, the Biden administration just came out with a $2.2 billion plan by the Department of Energy to do this. The need is about $3 trillion by 2030. Just to put that in perspective, there will be electricity rationing in the United States if we don't do something. I mean, you have to make a decision. Do you want to fund or do you want to power a data center or do you want to power an EV plant? That's the kind of decision making we're going to have. And on housing affordability, here's some things that I think would be really interesting to do. Now, take a look at those and let me connect the dots for you. So you know that Kamala Harris just picked her VP, right? Governor Walz from Minnesota. Those are Minnesota's plans right there. They're spending about $1 billion. They decided to raise the income tax by 0.25% to fund this because they see the need to do something. That should ring a bell, right? But I'm just putting that up as an example. I'm not making, you know, any other kind of commitment to this thing. All right, here's an important question. Who's used ChatGPT? Why haven't the rest of you? I'm not kidding. This is one of the most powerful tools you can get your hands on for $20 a month. It's unbelievable. It's so much fun. What I'm going to show you is venture capital investments in AI in areas that could potentially either impact you or be a competitor for your business. Let me tell you why AI is really important. Now, this comes from Land O'Lakes, right? The CTO, Chief Technology Officer. And he said something startling. He said that with AI and biotechnology, they can raise the yield of an acre from 180 bushels of corn to 540 by 2030. Whoa. An acre in Iowa sold recently for $40,000. $40,000. I'm here to tell you, it's cheap. If this is right, it's underpriced by 3x. And that's the point. That's why we've seen the stock market go nuts. Because as Mark Benioff, who's the head of Salesforce, said, every single one of their clients is trying to figure out how to use AI because they want to open up the alligator's mouth, right? They want to drop expenses, raise productivity, and raise revenues. That's what this is all about. All right, with that preference, let me get into some of this. Smart grid. This is something that you're going to have to start thinking about. Manufacturing supply chain. Obviously, this is really critical for a number of different reasons. There's some interesting. Atlas is an interesting company. They provide a dynamic map of global supply chain for businesses, governments, logistics firms. That's pretty helpful. Handling and warehouse. Mitra. Like, if you're in the warehouse business and you've been looking at, like, trying to buy, I don't know, like, forklifts and such, right? They're really fancy. There's a lot of stuff that goes on that. That company eliminates forklifts. They create a Legoland, to some extent, of moving things on this platform. And in case you think that's crazy, Albertsons has already put that. That's a big grocery chain down in the lower, right? They've already put it in five of their big distribution centers. Pretty wild stuff. Cyber, growth industry, in case you didn't know. It's only going to get worse with the development of AI. Obviously, you're going to see more and more and more of this. Talent acquisition, that's pretty important too, right? It's not only finding people, but it's holding people, right? It's like the reservation from Seinfeld scene, right? Anybody can, you know, take a reservation, but it's holding the reservation. It's holding that talent that you want. And then digital humans, yeah, there's a lot going on, whether it's medical or so on. You can digitally recreate someone in your office. Take all of their emails, take all of their voicemails, take all of their contracts, put them into a bot, and you recreated them. Something to think about when they're walking out the door to your competitor. So with that in mind, I think that's it. Yeah, so that was a lot. So I just want to say thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today for Addressing Alaskans. We just heard the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's 2024 Economic Development Luncheon event. The full report is available on the Addressing Alaskans page. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.